Welcome, welcome, welcome to the French Connections Friday edition. Today's date is Friday, the 2nd of November, 2007. My name is Daryl Bradford Smith, and it's great to have you here for another installment of the French Connection, this most important of broadcasts, ladies and gentlemen. We have information to share with you tonight regarding the Columbine. Well, it was a massacre, and I'll use that as a lead-in, massacre, but what most people don't know about that Columbine shooting is that the information put out into the public realm was almost everything they put out was fraudulent, was not the truth, or was only bits and parts of the truth. And investigators have been looking into this for some time, but very few people have looked into it and done the kind of work that my guest has done. He's actually put together quite a remarkable video. It is available on YouTube for you to see. And his name is Evan Long, and Evan is he's done a great job of researching this subject, and I want to bring him up right now. Evan, are you with me?
Yes.
Great to have you here, Evan. You know, listen, I got to say, after watching the film, I was shocked because I thought I knew quite a bit about that event, and what I found out was that that I practically knew nothing. You want to, first of all, give everybody your details so they know where to get the video.
Absolutely. The video is called The Columbine Cause, and if you Google that, it'll come up in the results. The webpage, the address is http://www.xmail.net/myname-evanlong, EVANLONG/TCC/. So that's xmail.net/evanlong/TCC.
Well, for the listeners that are on the French Connection, we're going to place that link up with this audio file so people can get to it from our site as well. I have to start out with this. the lead up to this, there were other shootings in the United States and worldwide, were there not, that had very odd and powerful similarities to this particular shooting, weren't there?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, for instance, one that had quite a few connections or apparent connections was the Dawson College shooting in Montreal last year, where you had I believe the guy's name was Kim Beer Gill. He was also into the trench coat thing and referenced Harrison Klebold, and the media early on tried to blame the guy who made a video game about Columbine for the shooting. So quite a bit of overlap there.
Yeah, well, it seems like they try to blame this on things that people either will get on board with right away, such as violent video games, or on guns, or the availability of guns. Did they not? They link this to the availability of guns.
Yes. From looking at it, it looks to me like Columbine was perhaps intended to be the be-all, end-all as far as achieving the political objective of disarming Americans by using an act of terrorism. It didn't work, and there have been a lot of shootings since. Just from looking at all the media coverage, all the statements by politicians, it looks like that was the goal. For whatever reason, it fell apart.
Well, there was a success story for the criminals when they had a shooting down in Hobart that had a lot of the same kind of characteristics of the Columbine shooting, And it did end up in legislation that took guns away from the Australian population, did it not?
Yes. There was also a shooting in Port Arthur. Same kind of scenario. I'm a little more familiar with that one. And there are a few articles about that where, you have the shooting blamed on a guy who is borderline retarded. And yet the accuracy of the shooting is ridiculously high. You know, people killed with all headshots.
They did the same thing over in Scotland with this pedophile who shot a bunch of children. And then what they did after the shooting event, they banned guns in Scotland and used that to stop any hunters from having guns in Britain. So they have had successes. And so this kind of shows you what motivates them to continue trying to kill people through these terrible violence, acts of violence. Now, what you found out was what the people were told in the press was absolutely inaccurate. You want to start maybe discussing some of the inaccuracies that you discovered right away?
Sure. Well, I just say right there, I had studied just the general. This wasn't the first thing that I had found out was a lie. I had known that the media lied and so forth, and I'd even seen some examples. After reading the actual police reports, which is where most of the information in the video, probably 80% of it comes from, it's just the police reports that nobody's read, really. I'd go back to the media articles, and my jaw would, I'd be saying to myself, this is nothing but lies. I couldn't believe how many lies there were. So it was an eye-opener for me, who, I'd already had an introduction to that. The main focus of the video, though, as far as cracking this nut of the Columbine deception, which really hasn't been done. There's not a lot of media as it stands out there talking about the inaccuracies, the deceptions. The main one, mostly, and what probably about 40% of the video is spent on, because there is so much on it, is that you're looking at probably a minimum of 8 to 10, possibly as many as 14 shooters involved in the attack, including adults.
What you do talk about quite a bit is people in their 30s being talked about by eyewitnesses, and in some cases, even staff had seen people that resembled grown adults. And so the credibility level of these reports is very high.
Oh, absolutely. Some people try to play it down because these are teenagers or, just these kind of ages kind of things. If they were five-year-old children, maybe. But when you go through the reports again, I encourage everyone to read these reports. They're at least the 11,000 page, there's about 22,000 plus all the audio, but the 11,000 pages online from the Daily Camera and Boulder Classified sites. You can't go more than really 25, 50 pages without stumbling across a few major things that you go, why wasn't this in the media? But in reference to that, yeah, you've got hundreds of people who saw things other than what was reported. People who spotted at one time 3, 4, 5 attackers, in one eyeful.
Right. And now, what I found interesting also in there was the connection to some of these principals in this so-called trench coat mafia as having ties to military families or police department personnel's children or some strange backgrounds that were not very clear, but all of them in almost every case have some background to military or the like. And did you find that to be true as well? I mean, bizarre. I mean, this seems to be in keeping with some of the other shootings, in fact.
Yes. It was less a focus of my research because it isn't covered as much in the reports. Bill Zabel, though, is one man who lives in Colorado and has done a fair amount of research on the attack. According to him and his research, well, I can go through, actually, well, just a few of the, we all know Eric Harris and Dylan Klebold, two other people who were named by name, Chris Morris and Robert Perry, who witnesses identified, they were students or former students, who witnesses identified. The Chris Morris character, his mother, according to Zabel, was a police officer, and there was a rifle stolen out of the trunk of her police car during a traffic stop not long before the shooting. According to him and some related reports, some shells from that rifle were found on the roof of the school, where, incidentally, there was a shooter spotted, but where Harris and Klebold never officially were.
Yeah.
And even photographed on the roof. There's a picture in the video of the sniper on the roof.
Well, you also talked, but let's even go further than that. She was not even brought on the carpet for that theft, was she?
Oh, no, she's still working there as far as I know, which is, kind of unusual.
Well, and then here's some of the more bizarre stuff. There was actually some people that saw a group of seven or eight people, including one 30-year-old plus man, with these people in advance of the attack. They had collected together somewhere on the outskirts of the school area, and it was reported by a passerby that these people had collected there, and they were wearing black and these raincoats and the rest. You want to go into that a bit?
Sure, yeah. There was a woman dropping off her daughter for school that day, and as she was pulling out of the parking lot, she noticed a group of, you know, 5 to 7 males wearing all black with the trench coats. And there was an older one who caught her eye, who she believed to be in his mid to late 20s, standing there with either a black-colored blanket or a coat draped over his arm, likely the trench coat, mm-hmm. given the group he was with. Now, this ties into, I believe it's shooter number 5 in the video, after the named ones, you get into one that I've termed the chiseled-faced shooter. He was described as someone who had short, spiky hair with a buff, muscular build, who looked like he was going bald and in his late 30s. So, he was seen with Dylan Klebold in the science classroom area by students who had locked themselves inside science rooms and hid under desks and so forth. And some of them looked out the window. They saw Klebold. Some of them recognized who he was. And then they saw this person he was with who, actually, when the investigators, there was one girl in particular who was saying it wasn't Eric Harris. She actually knew Eric Harris a little bit because she would see him in the smoker's pit at Columbine outside the school where they would take cigarette breaks. And she said she actually saw Harris that morning at 11:15, right before the attack. She talked to him. He talked to her. And then about 15 minutes later, 45 minutes later, she sees this shooter. All the investigators are telling her, okay, so it was Eric Harris that you saw with Dylan Klebold. And she's going, no, it was a guy in his 30s. He was way too muscular to be Eric Harris. It wasn't him. It was an adult.
So it appears to, does it appear to you, Evan, that the police were in advance were coached on how they were going to investigate and actually arrive at the scene of this? I mean, it looks like that the police didn't arrive innocent at this, did they?
No, there are scattered reports of police officers and other responders being on the scene immediately when it happened. There's actually quite a few anomalies here. Between Sheriff Stone, John Stone, who was the lead spokesman for the investigation to the press, between him saying that they had people on the scene right away, but they couldn't get into the school because they were way outgunned. Now, as far as being way outgunned by two teenagers who didn't have a lot of practice shooting and who only had 4 guns and a bunch of knives, this is an unusual statement. You also have FBI on the scene. Now, the FBI, because of a particular law that had been passed a few years before, when there's a gun-related event, the FBI has an option of deploying at a scene basically at their discretion. They did, employ that option and were there. But you had SWAT teams all around the building receiving fire reportedly from all of the entrances, decked out like RoboCop, yet they're not going into the building. Now, it raises a couple of questions as to why. There have been, again, scattered reports, not some of them anonymous, of individuals who said, I was there, and we were told not to go in, we were told to stand down. And I would like to see some of these people come out of the shadows and speak up, because that's all a part of cracking this deception. We only have so much to work with until more people come forward. But, yeah, that's been the story. And when you have all these heavily armed people outside the school not going in, it really makes you say why.
Yeah. Well, maybe they were there to protect the event not from not happening but to happen. But they wouldn't know that if they were just cogs in the wheel. Basically, what they would be getting from their leadership is to stand down, we're under fire, we don't know what to do yet, and blah, blah, blah. My question to you is, where is the FBI office in relation to Columbine? And how the heck did they get to this site and allow this to go on long enough for them to even arrive there?
Right. Well, they're in Denver, which Littleton... Actually, Columbine is an unincorporated Jefferson County. Probably the nearest town and where a lot of the kids were from was Littleton. But the school itself was not in Littleton. But anyway, the area, it's basically Denver suburbs. I believe it's about 20 miles, if I remember correctly. So, you know, if they're going 60 miles plus, you know, you're looking at, you know, what, 15 minutes?
Yeah, but, I mean, they got to be on the ready to leave the FBI office with a team.
Right.
I mean, how the heck, I mean, you know, the FBI gets called where they have people standing there in black ski masks ready to go out and SWAT teams. I mean, it seems very bizarre to me. It would probably take anybody, if you called a local FBI office in Des Moines, Iowa, and then said, you know, 25 miles from here, we got a big thing going on, they wouldn't be there in 20, 30 minutes. They'd be there in 2 hours.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, the other thing is you had people on this, that is local law enforcement and that kind of thing. Some of them showed up. They heard about it on the radio. They had a child in the school, you know, and they were a gun owner themselves. You know, they basically threw their stuff in the trunk, went down to the school to help out. You know, they were turned away. They were said no. I think one guy was actually arrested for having a gun at the school for that reason. So there were a lot of things. It leads into another thing, which is how long it took them to go inside the school versus how, you know, when they got there. Officially, the shooting started at about between 11:15 and 11:20. And some statements by police have SWAT teams going inside the building by noon. Harris and Klebold weren't found until about 3 o'clock, and most of the people weren't rescued until about 3 o'clock. And Harris and Klebold were allegedly dead by suicide by 12:08. That's the official time of their death. The thing about this, though, is you have shots being fired well into the afternoon. Again, many eyewitnesses. There are several hundred eyewitness statements in general in the report. Many of them contain, you know, they're just people speaking what they saw. Some of the ones in the video, you have a girl who was boarded up in the cafeteria. She heard the gunman shooting outside the door at 12:30. They were different from the SWAT because it was the gunman first, then they heard the SWAT come in. It was different, and the SWAT opened the door a little bit later. You had people in the library who had been in the library for some time and in the nearby area, probably putting it somewhere around 1:30, or at least 1 o'clock, hearing rapid-sounding, automatic-type, rapid gunfire, a short burst of it, at least 2 shots. Harris and Klebold did not have, they had pump-action shotguns, and they had semi-automatic guns. They didn't have any automatic weapons. So why are these people hearing automatic gunfire, particularly at least a half an hour after the attackers are allegedly dead? Also, I mentioned, you know, some people might say, well, it was the sound of them shooting themselves. Well, A, not with automatic weapons. The other part of that is Harris allegedly killed himself with a shotgun in his mouth. That's quite a different sound from, you know, even 9mm fire, semi-automatic.
I mean, look, you're trying to make a case for this being an inside job of murder done by outside forces. And I've got news for you. It is so easy to peg as that it's unbelievable. After I watched the video, my jaw hit my chest. You must have been shocked going through this. Keep coming with the anomalies, Evan. I want to just keep coming with them. Make this so ridiculous to even listen to that anybody listening to this broadcast is going to be, what in the hell happened there?
All right. So that's a good place to pick up. So we've already got shots being fired until 3 o'clock. Actually, one news article said by 3:45, a volley of shots rang out in the school. So who is shooting and why? Secondly, you have a body count, officially of 15, 12 students, one teacher, who could have been saved, incidentally, who slowly bled to death because the paramedics, they were continually told, oh, the paramedics will be there in 10 minutes, and they never came. And this guy is there bleeding to death for hours and could have easily been saved. He was the one holding the sign up in the window, one bleeding to death.
Well, it seems to me that, you remember the guy, they had this young man and his mentor riding around in Virginia shooting people, the sniper.
Yeah.
And he had military training experience and blah, blah, blah. He sounded like an MK Ultra type of dupe. This has been going on for a while, and what they need to do so desperately in order to really make the takeover of America smooth as they'd like is to remove the weapons from the population. Now, you know as well as I do that America has over 250 million guns in the private side of the population.
Right.
And that kind of number frightens these criminals because If they're trying to put a control grid in place, which it looks like they are, especially looking at the financial mess we're facing, they need to pull these guns out of circulation. And one of the first things they did, interestingly, on a side issue, when they went into the Katrina New Orleans area, was they didn't go there to help people. They went there to get guns. And they had private military staff, including Blackwater, going house to house, filling up their vehicles with guns.
Yeah, I saw some pictures of some of that.
And, excuse me, but see, now what Americans have to do is get the means, motive, and opportunity down straight, and the motive part of it has to be very clear to people that they want your guns. And I think a lot of Americans do know this, and you'll notice after one of these shootings, rather than turning guns in, people go out and buy them.
Yeah.
It's actually had a reverse effect, hasn't it?
Yeah, well, and, you know, there's that argument, too. Like, if you have people on the scene, some of these incidents have been stopped by people who said, you know, who pointed a gun and said, put the gun down, and, you know, this kind of thing. There's that argument, certainly. And I just want to say, you know, to anybody who does support, you know, arms control, isn't terribly informed, you know, because it's like, you want to do it from the field, you know, it's like, well, yeah, you know, you got to, you know, then people won't shoot each other. There's a lot more to the story. I just want to say, and if anybody's supporting that, I just urge them, take a month, do some research, listen to some people who are maybe trying to tell you that this isn't what it is on its face. And that's what I would ask, because from what I've seen, you know, I'm the kind of guy, I don't want to see, you know, violence. And it would seem like that's the solution. I'm telling you, though, there's more to it, as I found out.
Well, you know, it's interesting. Countries that had guns as a legal right of their population who had these terrible events, like Australia, had a couple of shootings go on down there over time. And you'll notice that once they got the guns out of public hands, there's no more shootings. Now, that's not because the guns are missing from public, but they don't need to stage these things anymore. They've met their objective.
Yeah, it's like you know, it's a reign of terror where there are terrorist acts used to achieve political aims. And, yeah, if that aim has been reached, then that's a reasonable line of argument. You know, and as far as the campaign in America to do that, I mentioned it in the video. Basically, the main expose of Columbine, if you want to call it that, or what it was billed as, you know, what was billed as such, was Bowling for Columbine.
And yeah.
If for anybody who's seen it, it's not about Columbine. It's about guns. So you have this whole movie, you know, it's got Columbine in the title. The whole movie is about guns.
That's right.
And they even work in some of the other domestic terror, references at least, to the other domestic terror operations. Like they have Terry Nichols' brother threatening to shoot himself in the head on the camera. It's, you know, these cheap shots. But, you know, considering what's in what's in the report, not even the video, because, hey, 80% of the video, I just spent really reading quotes out of the report in a coherent manner, you know, that it tells a story. But as far as what was available at the time of that movie being made, you didn't hear anything about additional shooters or anything like that, but you heard a lot about why America should be disarmed.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know that Rahm Emanuel, the guy that runs the Democrat Party, his brother is the agent for Michael Moore, and Rahm Emanuel's father was an Irgun assassin in Israel.
Okay.
There you go. So, so he's about gun control, and he's always been about working for the criminals. And you'll notice that the accolades that go out to Michael Moore are all staged. His warm welcome in Hollywood and the rest by the same controllers he works for. So there's no surprises there. And, in fact, they tried to promote him in France here. France has a culture of guns. There are a lot of guns in private hands in France. However, they have restricted them recently and are becoming more and more draconian with their control of guns here as well. They haven't been able to get away with it here because there is a very powerful hunting culture in France. There are tens of thousands, if not 100,000 or more hunters in France who go out every hunting season and actually participate in hunting.
Yeah.
And in order to disarm this country, you would have to destroy a pastime that is entrenched in the society, and they haven't been able to do it. However, they tried this over in Britain, and it worked. They vilified hunters. They got the guns out of the hands of the public in any large measure. And they went after the hunters and made them into villains. And they did succeed in the whole island of Great Britain to remove every gun from private hands that it was there. So this has taken away our ability to fight back in the event of tyranny. And you know the Second Amendment is not in place so that we can go hunting. It's so that we can stop tyranny.
Yeah. Yeah, although I did see, I mean, even some of that when I was young in America, the vilification of hunters portraying as, you know, weird and backward and, oh, you know, they're still hunting. What's wrong with them? And I do actually cover it in the video, this progression towards a scientific, super-duper, you know, progress-enriched civilization, if you want to call it that, this, you know, state, where, yeah, all the things like that, being able to, you know, get your own food and all that kind of stuff, yeah, that has to go. It's vilified and put down and, you know, oh, yeah, so I've seen plenty of that, sure.
Well, but you don't see the fact that now we don't hunt deer in America, and they're overrunning certain areas of the Northeast and destroying their own habitat, and they're dying of starvation in winter because they're not being culled, and oh, they don't put any of those reports on air, do they?
Not so much, but everybody knows it, because if you go down to, say, lower New York, New Jersey, you know, ask people if they know anybody who's ever hit a deer with their car. Yeah.
Well, I do know about that, Evan, and it's actually unbelievable. Let me go into something about the video itself.
Sure.
What kind of stuff did you use to do that? Did you do any filming of your own, or were you basically collecting information and doing editing work?
Yeah, it's more or less. I think of it as kind of a automated narrated PowerPoint, more or less. It was kind of what I was working with, but I felt like it got it across information-wise and can, again, hopefully start this conversation. But it's mostly, you know, screenshots from the reports, pictures from media, from Jefferson County itself, illustrating what went on. Well, actually, one of the pictures that's included leads to another anomaly. The picture of Harrison Klebold in the library, the way that they died. We were told that this was a... double suicide, although
yep.
The fact that Klebold, all right, you kind of have to see the video to see what I'm talking about, and I put a black box over part of their head so that you don't see the whole, you know, blown-up head thing. You know, you can find the uncensored version on the Internet if you want it. You know, I'm not trying to discourage people from looking. You know, just if you're watching the video and you just not to make anybody throw up while they're watching it. Anyway, Klebold's lying there with, he's on his back. Harris is to Klebold's right, facing the same direction, slightly back some, so that Harris's feet are about at Klebold's chest level. Now, the thing is, Klebold was right-handed, but the bullet went through his head from the left to the right, which is a little bit unusual. Also, the way that the blood splattered...
Well, is there a single press organ or press organization or journalist who bit the bullet and tried to get any of this out, tried in any way, whether it be in national, international, or even local or regional in reporting that was maybe early on put out some reports that they had wished they hadn't put out? Or, you know, after 9/11, they had to play catch-up on some of the stuff that was being reported and then make it go down the memory hole because some of the reporters were actually telling the truth. Was there any of that, that you found when you were doing your research?
Not that I know of, honestly. Well, the people that I thank at the end of the video, I can name them on one hand pretty much because there's been so little coverage of this. And even among people who know about things, I'll say, yeah, and Columbine, you know, was a cover-up too. And they're like, I don't know about that. Well, I do. You know, now I actually have something to point them to. But you had John Quinn, who was an independent. He did a lot of the early work. Robert Sterling, who runs conformist.com with a K.
Yep.
Bill Zabel, and more recently, Rolf Zeschmar at Echoes of Columbine. And then there have been a couple of interviews since. That's been mostly it. Now, in the mainstream, you had a guy called Dave Cullen writing for Salon who wrote a lot of the articles. Looked like, you know, he was. But I read the stuff. I couldn't even read half of it because it was just so chock full. Not only of heavily loaded words to steer your mind and emotions in a particular direction, but just out-and-out falsehoods. And no, nobody covered the attackers and, you know, the additional attackers and all this kind of stuff.
Why is Colorado seem to be a hotbed of this kind of new? Well, they call it the New World Order. I don't like to call it that because my research, and I've been extensive and exhaustive in my research, it is a Zionist conspiracy that I've discovered. But why does it seem Colorado's a real focal point for this kind of stuff? It seems that to me anyway.
Yeah, you know, it's a good question. I've heard that bantered about. I don't know that I can particularly answer it, except, you know, I mean, the rumors that go, and I would, you know, leave them as such until they're more substantiated. You have things like the backup plan for Washington, that if anything ever happened to Washington, they would move it all to Denver, and, you know, the U.S. Federal operations and things like that. I just don't know, though. But it does seem, well, according to Zabel, who does live out there, and who talked to many of these people, who talked to a lot of the students who held meetings asking people to come forward in the early days, and was actually met with some strange statements, like, there are things we don't want outsiders to know about what happened. It's like, why? But, yeah, you know, there is that. According to him, he said that many of the children who went to Columbine were in some way, you know, they had law enforcement parents or military parents, or federally employed parents of one type or another. Even Harris grew up or spent a good chunk of his childhood at Plattsburgh Air Force Base in New York, moved, I believe, well, in his mid-teen years. He had no problems there. From all accounts, he was a normal, happy teenager, although there were some reports that have surfaced that he used to complain to his friends that he was being drugged on the base. Anyway, we know he was on psychotropic medication later on, around the time of the shooting. This may not have been the first time, although, again, sketchy details on that.
But well, you know, the gentleman, that young gentleman, Taylor, who was, they tried to, Dr. Bill Deagle, this cretin that shows up on a lot of these truth networks doing shows that he actually pays for. This guy was very available for drug prescriptions after the fact. And did you hear anything about him writing scripts for everybody of Zoloft and the rest of it?
I did, actually, yes, with from Donna Taylor. There's an interview with her on the internet talking about that. And her son Mark did attempt to bring a lawsuit against the maker of Luvox, because from what he had heard, you know, Harris had been a pretty normal person before. I think it's more than the drugs, but certainly the drugs do help. From what I've been told, they're kind of based around hallucinogens, the theory being the glue that holds your personality together chemically in your brain. These drugs kind of loosen that glue so that a skilled therapist can manipulate your personality around with greater ease.
Did anybody look into who these people were seeing medically? I mean, you can't get the records from their visits, but can you find out if they were seeing what their psychiatrist's name was? I mean, was it Dr. Jolie? You know, the MK Ultra guy? I mean, was that their physician?
Yeah. It's interesting. Harris was seeing somebody at, I believe it was a Colorado Family Center, and the guy's name escapes me at the moment. I didn't find anything on him, but you know, then again, more research could be done on this. But there's a section in the 11,000-page report, which is the main one, and there's a lot in it. But there's a section around page 10,000, which is about 6,000 pages just on Harris and Klebold, as opposed to eyewitness reports and things, but just on them. And there's a section in there where it covers Harris's medical history. And when it gets to the section on his recent psychiatric stuff, I think they mentioned the guy's name, but it looks like the folder, like there's a Xerox of a folder or something to that effect. It appears to be empty, though. So you basically have a page saying, you know, Harris, recent medical records, and then go on the next page and something completely different. So it's not in there. It's not really available from what I've seen in reports for public consumption. So it is of some interest to be, you know, to find out who he was seeing. Because the situation with the Harrises is kind of interesting. when police showed up at the Harris house on the day of the attack, they could smell gasoline vapors even from the street. House was full of gasoline vapors. The fire department determined that the vapors were present in an explosive concentration. So, and Wayne and Kathy Harris's parents were both home, along with Kathy Harris's sister. So they're home on a Tuesday in the middle of the day for no apparent reason. You know, you got a pipe bomb and a sawed-off shotgun, you know, handle out in Eric's room up there, boxes of bullets laying around and things. And, you know, it looks like the house is set to blow. So what's going on here? And then when police tried to talk to them, the Harrises refused. I think they finally talked to them in August. You know, just remember for everybody, you know, the shooting was April 20th, as I'm sure many of us remember.
Yeah.
You know, they took like 4 months. They said they wouldn't talk to investigators unless the investigators promised them immunity from prosecution. So what were they? The Klebolds did talk. You know, I'm not sure about their story. The Klebolds were the reason, allegedly, why Michael Moore made Bowling for Columbine. That was Tom Klebold's idea, according to Brooks Brown. But why weren't the Harrises talking? You know, what was going on there?
And what was the profession of the Harrises' father? What did he do? Was he one in the military?
He was, in the Air Force. I believe after he left, he continued to work around aircraft. I'm not exactly sure what he did after that point, but he appeared to have moved from Plattsburgh within a year of the base officially closing. And then they moved.
Well, now you should do is a follow up and see if any of these people ever were at Offutt Air Force Base in Nebraska, where the center of MK Ultra really was. Because it looks like these people are almost like a Manchurian Candidate kind of people who were set up for this.
It could well be, you know. And I'll just mention, as far as the people, we have it burned into our brains. Harris and Klebold. No, we're talking about, as far as, and just qualify it, people who were identified by eyewitnesses. You have Harris, Klebold, Chris Morris, Robert Perry, the old guy, somebody wearing camouflage pants, somebody wearing blue jeans, somebody with a round face who was neither Harris nor Klebold, somebody wearing baggy pants, somebody who was about 5'6 with ear-length hair, somebody on the roof, somebody in Weaver Park, which is a nearby park, and again, so you have all these people, and someone named Joe. Somebody heard the attackers say, Joe, I have three of them in here, where are you? So, you know, and then when you go and look at this trench coat group that was hanging around there, which I spent basically the first part of the video is about anomalies of the attack. The second part is about what was going on in that area, the parents, the friends, all this kind of stuff. And you get into that where one of these attackers even, you have the one named Joe, but there was someone in the group named Joe Stair. He recently died just a few weeks ago. It was an alleged suicide by hanging. The strange thing is, in the report, it was noted that there was blood found around his nose and on the floor, which is not a usual thing for hanging. So, as Deshmar suggested, you know, the family should ask a lot of questions at the coroner's office as to, you know, the circumstances of this guy's death.
How many strange deaths have there been after the fact of witnesses, students, people, and policemen? How many people have you been able to chronologize have actually died since?
Yeah, it looks like there were a few of them. You have a friend of the Scholes family. There was a boy named Isaiah Scholes killed. He was killed in the library, as the story goes. And a friend of his family was trying to get a video together or something about the shooting. I don't even think it was necessarily an expose. He wound up dead after that. And it's escaping my mind at the moment. There were about 5 or 6, though, unusual deaths.
Well, I want to recommend something to you, Evan, and this is from my heart. I've been doing this kind of stuff for about 3 years now, and I've been threatened. I've had visits to my home by no-necked people with Israeli accents. I've had situations where I thought I was in danger. What I'd like you to know is the only safety you can find is by becoming a larger personality. If you are obscure, no one will follow the fact that you've been eliminated, and that's the way that they can get rid of you. If you have a very strong profile, it becomes more difficult for them. They don't want to bring attention to themselves.
Yeah, the visibility. Exactly. No, I agree.
Well, so I want to, you know, since you've taken the courageous step of putting this out there, I would tell you to soldier on and try to get this out. Has anybody else offered to put you up on their radio broadcast?
One so far. I'll tell you, though, I guess it's getting around. I think it's going to take a while for people to digest really what's in the information because it's so alien to what has been really burned into our brains very hard for years about this attack. I think when people digest it, which could take a little while at first, then there'll be more. Only one so far, and there has been considerable notification, shall we say, of the media and so forth. And I know, sending this out, that for every probably 1,000 people that I send it to in the mainstream media, you know, there's maybe only 5 honest people in those offices that it's going to reach. But, you know, what I was just thinking to myself as I did it was, you know, this is the time for any honest people in the media, any honest people in any of these organizations, you know, Citizens for This and That, to stand up and do something. And, you know,
yep.
So I'm sending it to a lot of the bad guys. So what, you know, I mean, the honest people, this is the time. There is no time to wait. This is the time when we all have to stand up and do something. Because, you know what, it could have already been you, and it will be you eventually.
Well, and, you know, the MO of the whole event and its cover-up and its subsequent disappearance from the headlines reminds me of the Oklahoma City bombing in the Morrow Building. They had so much evidence that it was an inside job by the government, and yet nobody's able to get traction on the story. And it's almost exactly the same, except that, now listen to this, the Trinidou family, whose son was murdered in jail,
yes.
the brother, being a lawyer, forced open some documents that have really made this into something a bit more powerful. And yet still, we're there every day trying to get that out. And I've reported on that on at least 3 different occasions, that this, of course, was an inside bomb. And it involves MK Ultra again with this nitwit, what's his name, Nichols, and what's the other guy from Oklahoma? Tim McVeigh. McVeigh was this guy was a Manchurian candidate. He was there were people who saw him on military bases in Arizona. I mean, the idea that we wouldn't be looking into this deeper. But see, what happens is they come right behind that with another one. They got 9/11 now, and there's so many anomalies to investigate there. And so what they've got here is I'm overwhelmed. Evan, you know what I decided to do?
Yeah.
Start doing exposés on the people who are behind it all, because that's where the thread is always going to be consistent. They can keep hitting us with new disasters, but if I do exposés on who's doing all the disasters, then they're in trouble.
Absolutely. Well, you know, it's crime solving, and you know, when you look at a serial murderer or something of that, I mean, a serial murderer in comparison has probably fewer political aims. But the whole operation has many similarities. You know, the serial murderer might not be trying to, might not have the kind of influence to swing their actions towards considerable gain like somebody, you know, say a congressman or something like that could. But basically, the element of the crime is the same. And when you see crimes, you determine a pattern. You know, you can start tracking the suspects and the people pulling the strings. And using patsies, these are large operations, which is, again, you know, if you look at something like, it may be difficult when you look at Columbine to understand these kids were patsies, which is not something everybody thinks these kids did it, even relatively informed people, people who know, Oswald was a patsy, these kinds of things. They think that these kids did it alone. They were patsies. So somebody else, you know, orchestrated this act of terrorism. And I've wondered if maybe some of the psychological resistance to understanding that is, well, they wouldn't use kids or something. But think about Oklahoma City. If you know anything about that, it's a considerably fishy, you know, scenario that the government's painted. You know, they blew up a daycare center there. So
that's right.
They're willing to kill children. And it's not the only one. You know, there was whatever a hostage situation in Russia.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, that's viable targets. These people, you know, when you're willing to kill for political aims, you know, you don't. I mean, maybe some of them draw the line, you know, at an age limit. But that's what we're looking at with Columbine. We're looking at they used kids, and it might have even been their own kids. Some of these people involved.
Yep.
So that's not out of the question. You know, just because you don't know anybody who wouldn't be like that doesn't mean that they're not out there, or that you don't know somebody who secretly, you know, knows something really bad is going on. You know, again, it's just speaking out. And understanding first and foremost, excuse me, when these things happen, you know, these people are patsies. Harrison Klebold, and this goes for everyone, including all the confused young people who think that these guys are some kind of, well, they killed the jocks or something. First of all, they didn't kill jocks. They killed kind of indiscriminately, or maybe even beyond, they might have even had particular targets, but they weren't jocks, or for any reason aside from covert reasons. I'm talking specifically about Cassie Bernal and Rachel Scott, who were writing about being martyred. It's a little funny. Again, you know, it's a piece of the puzzle that, you know, maybe fits, maybe doesn't, and has to be worked on. We're in the early stages, so to speak, of that. But, you know, these were weak, weak people psychologically. And I'm not saying that they, you know, Harris, Klebold, trench coaters in general. It's not necessarily of their own doing. They might have been weakened, perhaps, by the people who brought them up, by the people whom they're idolizing in these cultural things. But ultimately, and I have an exchange, actually, that was pulled out of one of the later reports where Eric Harris is talking to a classmate, where he's a female who he kind of dated, but then she went out with somebody else, and so it was, you know, weird between them. Anyway, so she writes to him, "Did I make your hit?" These are notes they're passing in class. "Did I make your hit list yet?" Harris says, "Nope, but redacted is still in the top five. He will always be under the gun and in the sight since he hit me in the face, even though it didn't hurt at all." He switches over into German midway through, and, you know, but basically it's this thing of people who are just torn by bitterness and anger and really reduce themselves to just pathetic behavior because of this extreme weakness. And again, it's not necessarily their fault, but to idolize this kind of stuff is beyond.
Well, who was feeding the diet of Hitlerization and all this? I mean, one of these kids, actually a couple of them were Jewish. So who was doing the feeding of this? Because I heard that they actually had some references to Hitler and to. It's very bizarre, this trench coat mafia thing. Who's the person who came up with that sickness?
Yeah, it's a funny thing. The trench coat deal, which kind of the tip of that iceberg emerged, or, you know, came to the surface in a commercial way in the mid-90s. It was part of the gothic industrial dark wave. There's a bunch of different subgenres of it. Started coming out of the 70s. You had people like Neil Megson, a.k.a. Genesis P. Orridge. Some of the people he worked with, you had performance artists working in creating this industrial culture. Some of the acts were Throbbing Gristle, Coil, Psychic TV. These are all occult-themed things. Some of them went on to become producers for people like Nine Inch Nails, Ministry, Marilyn Manson, things that are really popular among the trench coat circuit. You can find some of this by just doing research on any of these names. They don't necessarily hide it, but people looking at it, because it's so unfamiliar and because you probably wouldn't want to listen to it, it's not very appealing to most people, except people who feel maybe bitter and angry and are, you know, harboring, like, real hostility and maybe feel like people hate them. It's appealing to people like that because, you know, putting on a swastika or whatever, taking on this kind of evil enemy type image, you know, it's kind of the way that they feel already. And so if they have a whole culture that they can buy into, putting on a black trench coat, they can get into that. And then you make the leap where you have some of these people like Megson who, you know, found occult organizations like the Temple of Psychic Youth, which is more than adjacent to the Church of Satan and these kinds of things. That's where you start getting into the more severe mind.
Well, you know that the Church of Satan under the Temple of Set was Michael Aquino's project, and he was the lead man in MKUltra at the Offutt Air Force Base in Nebraska, and he was actually involved in child abuse allegations and actual evidence in the Presidio over in San Francisco. But the fact of the matter is he's the follow on to Anton LaVey.
Absolutely. And the thing about this is, for anyone who understands, well, not a lot of people really understand the occult, but the basis of it is seeking happiness in the world by achieving your desires and fulfilling your fantasies. Now, once you get into that, it picks up steam and doesn't let you go. And that's the thing where you have people like this creating music and creating culture that disaffected individuals get into one way or another, and it doesn't let them go. Not only that, but sometimes they employ the subliminals and other techniques to really start messing with someone. And if we look at the influence of institutes like Tavistock, Human Relations, one starts to wonder if these pieces of these projects, these movements, aren't actually a form of cultural warfare intended to weaken a people so that they're more eventually...
Well, in America, you want to look into an organization called the Stanford Research Institute out of Berkeley, Southern, I think, I don't know the name of the county, but it's on the campus of Stanford University. Stanford Research Institute has been staffed for a very long time with operatives from the intelligence services of Israel and other countries. And yes, it is a cultural assassination program is what it is. And it's about demoralization. If you know anything about the French Connections work, we do a lot of work about why are they working so desperately to demoralize us. Well, once you've destroyed someone's ability to feel faith in their futures, they become very malleable to any kind of force that is placed upon them. And you'll find that that's what's happening in the United States today.
That's absolutely right. And, you know, and then the thing is, once people buy into that, they maybe don't understand what they're doing. You know, they maybe think, oh, this is a rebellious thing and that kind of thing. But when you follow the money, you find that what you think is this rebellious thing that you're buying into is, in fact, a product of, you know, the real enemy that you haven't identified. And that's the really sad part. And I'll bet what happens has happened certainly to many teenagers around the country. In the case of maybe Columbine, they probably had some, you know, some miracle grow applied to that particular plant, you know, to help it into what it became, which was intended to be this gigantic fiasco.
You know. And you wouldn't be surprised, Evan, to find out that they're actually throwing Miracle-Gro in other places in the country as we speak, would you?
No, not really. I mean, you know, this is what's happened. This is what's erupted. You know, Lord only knows. Well, we do know a little bit about what's been going on. I know a lot of people are going to groan when I say video games. Yeah, you know, it's a piece of the puzzle. But when you put all this stuff together and again, help it along with very specific, if you have, say, a therapist which is raising you for a particular task, who is, you know, debilitating your mind for a particular task, then, yeah, it's going to turn into something pretty ugly. But we know that the video games are being used for military training to desensitize people to killing and all these kinds of things. Actually, I'll mention on that subject, there's a game. The name is eluding me at the moment. But it's a horrific thing where the plot line, the characters are these like space marine mutant things. They're the stories that the characters, you know, they go through like 30 years of, becoming immune to poison, and, they go through all this abuse, basically to make them into horrible monster assassin things, immune to all, superhuman, genetically modified cyborg killing machines. This is exactly a, really just an up-to-date, higher-tech version of exactly what Eric Harris was doing. If you look at the video game Doom, which he said he had become obsessed with, he said that almost every one of his thoughts, and I'm not saying this is everyone, but think about what you're doing when you play this game. What is it? But, that game, he said almost all of his thoughts related in some way to that game, which he had wanted to become a programmer of professionally. But that game has the exact same thing, where you're starring as a space marine going through all kinds of hostile areas, blowing up monsters. I wouldn't be surprised if in his mind, when he was doing whatever he was doing at Columbine, he had been taken to the point where that's actually what he saw, with his, that he couldn't differentiate anymore.
Well,
it's a horrible thing, but that is, I believe, what's going on.
Well, what I'd like to do right now is give you an opportunity to state for the record that you have no interest in ever hurting yourself, so that there you have an immunity there, and maybe give out your details one more time for everybody. And I want everybody to know they can get it on the site. But go ahead.
Yeah, I have a lot going for me, and if anything were to abruptly happen, suspect foul play immediately.
Yes, it will. Not suspected. It will be foul play.
Oh, absolutely. No. You know what? Because I want to – this video was a big this is a very important subject that has not been tackled. I'm very happy to have been able to brought it to people's attention and to start the ball rolling on this. And I want to see that continue for years on end and bring these people to justice behind this machine, that's doing this. The video is called The Columbine Cause. At the website is http://www.xmail, that's xmail.net/ Evan Long, EVANLONG, /TCC, and an optional slash at the end.
You got to make a much smoother thing there, Evan.
we'll see how that goes. But for now, if you can't remember that or have a link, just Google The Columbine Cause in quotes, and you'll find it.
Actually, what we're going to do is put a link to it on our website, and we're getting between 15 and 20,000 people a day. I hope what we can do is route some more traffic to you. Did you get any traffic when last time we put it on?
Yeah, actually, it's been about 3 weeks so far. It's gotten almost 2,500 hits. I had to change the video file once or twice, so the counter got reset. But it looks like about maybe 350 people got all the way through it so far, which is promising. And I'm sure many more. Well, the first one, about 1,000 people have watched or more. But, maybe some people will put it away. Some people maybe watch one part, bookmark it, come back to it, whatever. But there has been a decent response for no media coverage so far.
Well, what I would like you to do, if you would, is send that address to my webmaster, as well as writing maybe a short paragraph or two about what you did, and we'll put your whole event right up in your own words with your own video, and so you can do your own little press presentation on the site, and we'll allow that link to be directly on the front page, and of course we'll have this interview right in the same spot so people can be informed in that way as well. How's that sound?
Great. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. And anybody, the email's on there too. So, start sharing information and again, getting this discussion off the ground, and waking people up to the reality that Harrison Klebold, we're patsies.
Well, Evan, I want to thank you for coming on the French Connection. As usual, we try to give people the information that no one else is willing to touch. And it's in keeping with the kind of conspiracy that I've uncovered in many other areas. So keep up the good work, my friend. Be well and protect yourself. And again, thank you so much for being on the air with me today.
Thanks a lot. I appreciate it very much.
Ladies and gentlemen, take care of your families. And until the next time, this is Daryl Bradford Smith telling you all, please be well. Bye bye now.
I don't know a soul who's not been. Don't ever friend new feet. we come on the ship that sailed the moon. We come in the ages most uncertain hour, and we sing an American tune. No, but it's all right. It's all right. You can be forever blessed. Thank you.